नमस्कृतम जय मनोरथम देवी सरस्वती जय मुदीराय नस्तापरायेषु अपरेषु नित्यं भगवत सेवाया भागवती तम श्लोके भक्ति भवति नैष्ठिकी. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which Lord Chaitanya recommended as one of the three highest principles to follow. These are the translations and purports by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, first canto, 19th chapter, text number 30.
Samritas
Samritas
Datra
Datra
Mahan
Mahan
Mahiyasam
Mahiyasam
Bhavashi
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 Bhavashi Bhavashi Bhavashi Bhavashi Bhavashi
Bhavashi
Samrita Stetra Mahan Mahayasam
Samrita
Stetra Mahan Mahayasam
Samrita Stetra Mahan Mahayasam
Maharshi Radha Shri Devarshi Sangai
Maharshi
Radha Shri Devarshi Sangai
Maharshi Radha Shri Devarshi Sangai
Maharshi Radha Shri Devarshi Sangai Yaro Chatra
Shukadeva Goswami was then surrounded by saintly sages and demigods, just as the moon is surrounded by stars, planets, and other heavenly bodies. His presence was gorgeous, and he was respected by all. Repeat, Shukadeva Goswami,
Shukadeva Goswami
was then surrounded
by saintly sages
by saintly sages,
and demigods.
And demigods.
Just as the moon is surrounded by stars.
Just as the moon is surrounded by stars.
Planets and other heavenly bodies.
Planets and other heavenly bodies.
His presence was gorgeous.
And
he was respected by all.
Purport
by Srila Prabhupada. In the great assembly of saintly personalities, there was Vyasadeva, the Ramarshi, Narada, the Devarshi, Parashuram, the great ruler of the Kshatriya kings, etc. Some of them were powerful incarnations of the Lord. Sukadeva Goswami was not known as a Ramarshi, Brajarshi, or Devarshi, nor was he an incarnation like Narada, Vyasa, or Parashuram. And yet he excelled them in respects paid. This means that the devotee of the Lord is more honored in the world than the Lord himself. One should therefore never minimize the importance of a devotee like Sukadeva Goswami. Om Giranti Miradhisyakaranjana Salakaya Chakshurinmanitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Svapadantikam. One of the offenses that we recite every day, one of the things to avoid is offending a devotee. Devotees are very sacred and special people. They're not ordinary people. It's easy to forget this or take it for granted living in the association closely of so many great saintly persons. It is also said that a devotee is like a desire tree. Panchakalpatruvyasya. We also recite that every day. That we offer our respects to all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. They're just like desire trees, it is said in that famous verse. So sometimes that seems a little obscure. How can a devotee be like a desire tree? Desire tree is a very exceptional thing. There are trees in the spiritual world that can award anything, just like you can get any fruit, or like you can get a mango fruit from a mango tree, but you can't get a pomegranate tree from a mango tree, and you can't get an apple from a mango tree. There are desire trees in the spiritual world that you can get anything. And the story is often repeated that once upon a time, there was such a tree in the Vrindavan area. It was said to be this tree that's the Imlikala tree that recently left its body. It's on the park ground path. I'm sure many of you have seen it. There's a little temple there. And that once, as the story goes, there was a wood chopper. We don't call them woodsmen anymore because that's not politically correct. I call them wood choppers or wood chopper persons. Anyway, there was a wood chopper. And he was chopping wood, and he didn't realize that he was under this tree, the sacred Imlikala or desire tree, but he was in the Holy Land, so he was chopping wood, and he became very, very tired, and he thought, this blade is very dull, and it takes me a long time to cut the wood. I wish I had a new axe handle, but what can I do? And then lo and behold, boom, there was a brand new, shiny, glistening axe handle, newly sharpened. So he began to cut his wood with renewed enthusiasm, and he could cut a lot more wood a lot faster, and it was beginning to pile up, and then he thought, gee, it was amazing, I just wish that I had a new axe handle. All of a sudden there's a new axe blade, and there's a new axe blade. So I think I'll just wish that instead of having to cut all this wood, it would just cut by itself and pile up. So he wished that, and boom, all of a sudden there was a big, beautiful, neatly piled stack of wood, just like he had cut it himself, but only better. So then he started to scratch his head, and he realized that there's something unusual going on. And I think I'll just wish for something else. So he wished in his mind for a big feast. He enumerated in his mind all the different things he wanted, samosas and puris and all these great things, chutneys. And all of a sudden, kaboom, there it was, a beautiful dish of 20 different of his favorite preparations. So he began to eat very ravenously, and pretty soon he devoured the entire plate. And what happens after you eat a big plate of prasadam? So he
leaned up against this desire tree and fell asleep. Well, he was so sound asleep that when he woke up, he was shivering cold, it was night, it was dark. And he was very afraid that it was dark because usually he was in bed before dark. And he started to think, oh, this is terrible. This is very dangerous. I'm not here alone in this forest. What if a big tiger comes and eats me? And all of a sudden, the big tiger came. Because he was thinking, whatever he wanted happened. So that's the story, and the message of that story, so the moral of it is that we have to be careful how we think when we're in the sacred holy dham, or to speak of being under a desire tree, because everything we think is magnified thousands of times. I heard Prabhupada himself say this in Mayapur, that whatever we think good is magnified 1,000 times, whatever we think bad is magnified 1,000 times. So purification of the mind is very, very essential, very important. It's described how in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 17th chapter, how we have to be very careful to engage in austerity of the mind, to be very pure, to associate with good devotees, to read constantly and to chant, and thereby our mind will become purified. And living in the holy dham is kind of like that. It's a purified place. Srila Prabhupada himself purified this place, and as Prabhupada said, all of the temples of ISKCON, they are like holy places of pilgrimage. They're like Mayapur and they're like Vrindavan, all the places where Prabhupada went. So we have to not only purify our speech and our hearts, but our minds, the way we are thinking, how we think of, especially of devotees, and we have to be very careful according to that, how not to offend devotees, not to consider them to be ordinary people. I heard recently one tape in which Srila Prabhupada was, he had completed the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. I don't know the exact date or the location, but it's a tape you can get, part of the Bhaktivinoda tape ministry. And Prabhupada said in this tape, you'll be glad to know that today I've completed the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. And there were the usual Hari Bowls and cheers and a few Madhanga beats and kartals. Everyone was very happy in the middle of the lecture. And then Prabhupada went on to say how the credit for all this at work actually goes to Prajuna, or he called him Panditji at the time, Prajuna Rana Prabhupada's disciples, and he referred to him as my beloved disciple Prajuna. He said he actually did all the work. He did the editing, did the proofreading, he was doing some of the translation, and due to him the thing became, in Prabhupada's words, very perfect, he said. And then he said, and his wife was also responsible for doing so much of the work. She did so much typing and so much of the day-to-day work. So I'm very, very grateful to these devotees. And then he went on to point out some other devotees that he said they don't have to be brahmacharis, they don't have to be single, they can be householders. This one's a householder. That one, he was naming various devotees. So Prabhupada was expressing his great gratitude to his devotees for helping him complete such a Herculean task was writing the Chaitanya Chaitamrita and glorifying them right in public in a lecture, like anything. So I began to look up and see how many times Prabhupada was doing this in his writings. We have the folio. And in many cases, there were 20 or 30, I'm still looking at them, in which Prabhupada is expressing his gratitude for his devotees helping him. He was saying how he didn't get so much help sometimes when he first came, and then all of a sudden people were helping him. And it was a very emotional exchange, how he was glorifying the devotees for making such sacrifices to help him spread his movement, and giving them the credit and the glory for doing all the hard work and for helping him to help his spiritual master to spread Krishna consciousness. And sometimes he was speaking to Indian audiences in India, and saying that these boys and girls, they're helping me. And I think it was around about 1971 when he came back to India after having been very successful in the United States. And he had his, what he called his dancing white elephants with him. And he was saying that, well, some people were asking him in Mumbai about, they don't have illicit sex, they don't gamble, they don't eat meat, they don't take intoxication. But it's hard to imagine that they give up movies. A question was asked something like that. And But said, no, he said, they don't go to movies. He said, they hate movies. They actually hate movies. And the devotees were nodding their heads. And there's a theater, if you know, just near the Bombay Temple, Chandan Cinema. And the Prabhupada said, yeah, there's a movie just walking distance away from here. They would rather chant Hare Krishna. Just sit and chant Hare Krishna. They won't go to that movie. They won't go. So they were quite amazed that here were some people who come from the land of enjoyment, and they wouldn't even go to a movie. It was very hard for them to compute that. But that was actually the case. I mean, who cares about what do people that live in those countries care about movies? But the population there were very addicted to going to movies. Even though they might have been following all the regular principles, they still like to go to movies somehow. Kali has encroached in such a way that even in the very poor countries, sometimes the movies have become very popular. Once we stayed in a little dharmashala in Andhra Pradesh. This was before television was invading India. And there was a big cinema house. And on top of the cinema house were speakers, big horns, big things, you know, these kind of like this, in all directions, all four directions. And we were sleeping maybe about half a mile away in this little kind of dharmashala type place, very simple. And the movie was blasting the soundtrack all night. We couldn't sleep, actually. It was almost impossible to sleep. From 11 o'clock in the evening till 4 in the morning, it was just blasting and blasting. And it was drawing hundreds and hundreds of people into this cinema so that they would see what the good life in Mumbai was like. They'd give up their farm life and move to the big cities and live in slums and big pipes and in little shanties and work in the horrible factories. And they could never go back to their village because they packed up everything and went. And this trend is still going on. But now you'll see in all the little hutments, they call them, even around the temples. Just a few years ago we walked through, and almost every one of those little huts has a TV aerial sticking out of it. So they're watching the lives of the rich and famous, even in places like that. It's very, very unfortunate what is happening, how Kali is acting, how the age of Kali is encroaching on everybody and making people think that the good life is having more and better things that can never be possibly obtained. So the devotees are very special because they're not enamored. Their vision, their consciousness is fixed on the spiritual world, so much Padapalavam. They're not concerned with this material world that is coming and going, that is here today and gone tomorrow, that is flickering, that is very alluring, very dazzling to the eye, but not actually satisfying. This is the spiritual dimension. It is mentioned in that verse in the 10th canto that the devotees, they're not concerned with the material world, which is dangerous, very dangerous at every step. And they consider that the pleasure of this material world is like the water in the calf's footprint, very little compared to the great ocean of transcendental bliss. That's the difference that the one who is devotional sees in the material world and the spiritual world. The material world actually has no pleasure. It appears to be, but it's like a mirage. It's glittering, and it's like, oh, I'm going to get my water at last, but then there's nothing when one gets there, nothing there. So one has a kind of healthy pessimism about the material world, that it's okay, but it's really not okay. It's not the place where we take shelter of. So the devotee is not an ordinary person because there's a kind of higher intelligence that sees that this material world is not actually the real place to be. And the devotee is glorified, especially glorified in this world, even more than those who have great positions, like here it's mentioned, the Rajarshis, the Ramarshis, the Devarshis. They're the saints among the demigods, the saints among the kings, the saints among the kshatriyas of the Brahmins. These are all very elevated positions. But the point Prabhupada is making here is that it is not by virtue of position. In English or Latin we have this word ex officio. It means that by virtue of the office, the person is considered great. But the real greatness is not one who is great by position. The Prabhupada is known once for saying that the person who wants fame the least gets it the most. The devotee is eternally famous. We were watching, I guess you saw too, the life of Prabhupada when he was a householder. how even the sannyasis and brahmacharis, they exhorted him that he should give the talk, he should give the speech. And they were more and more impressed with his great qualities. Abhai was so wonderful. And so we hear talks sometimes of the self-effulgent personality. Well, Prabhupada was like that even in his householder days. It wasn't a question of whatever his status of life might have been. He was in ways he would carry himself as a householder, just as a sinful person involved in pounds, shillings and pence, or in getting money and collecting money for his business. But even then, he was greatly respected by the members of the Gaudiya Math, even those who were dressed in saffron. He was extraordinary. And in Prahlad Maharaj's case also, he was surrounded by, like Shukadeva, by great demigods. And they were all there. They were present when Lord Krishna made his appearance. We mentioned this. And they were afraid. They were actually all afraid, even though they were great learned scholars and great empowered beings. They were given great responsibilities by the Lord, but they were terrified. And Prahlad Maharaj was very bold and very unafraid. So he was pushed forward, that you should go and pacify the Lord. He was very angry, and we can't approach him. So as a Nityasiddha, as a great devotee, as an example of a great personality, Prahlad Maharaj went forward to pacify the Lord and got his benediction. But no one else, irrespective of position, could approach the Lord in his angry position but a devotee. So a devotee is a very unusual, extraordinary person. Prabhupada had the ability to empower devotees. And even those who, he was writing, as we read in Prabhupada Lilamrita, he was writing back to his friends back in India to get this kind of help and that kind of help. But he found help among the Malecha and Yavanam community. He found that, as it is said, there are devotees in every street corner, we just have to find them. And that Vaishnava can't be ascertained by bodily type or by nationality or by ethnic origin or religious persuasion, or by age, or by gender, by anything else. A devotee is a devotee. And Prabhupada said, they're on every street corner. Once he was asked, how many devotees do you have? Some reporter asked him. Prabhupada's answer was, oh, they're unlimited. He was shocked. So Prabhupada then went on to say that, well, of course, they don't all know it. But there are devotees everywhere, and of all types. And we just don't know where they come from. We don't know. The person who delivers the mail, the postman, he might be your child's guru someday. We really don't know, do we? So devotees, they're unusual. And they're like desire trees. They really are like desire trees. That's a very hard thing to understand. I had a little experience yesterday. I was having some trouble with my computer, and Radhika Kama came over. We tortured him for about 3 hours. And instead of taking 3 days or 3 weeks, which would have taken me to figure out what was wrong, he figured it out in 3 hours. So, I mean, he's a devotee, and he's like a desire tree. Because this is, of course, material knowledge, but even materially, devotees can give us so much help, so much. I was, for a time, living with a devotee who was also very computer literate. I could have read through hundreds of pages of manuals to learn what I learned, but I learned it all just by asking a devotee. I learned everything. So devotees are like desire trees in so many ways. And not just that they're going to give us the transcendental knowledge, but that they really can help us in many, many ways. So Prabhupada empowered even the Malechas, even the Yavanas, and brought out their devotional qualities, and they became pure. So when Prabhupada went to India, the land of Ram and Krishna, and the land of Vedic culture, and the dancing white elephants were there, people were shocked because this India is kind of the bastion of the Vedic culture. People are used to their own way of doing things and seeing gurus and sannyasis who are of their own bodily type. And here were these shaven up people and girls in saris, and Prabhupada was saying that they don't even go to movies. And it was a radical kind of transformation that occurred in the consciousness of people. This was Prabhupada's methodology, you might say, to bring these people back and to show everywhere that Vedic culture was so powerful that the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so pure and so perfect that he saw, Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw, the people of all different origins, of all different nationalities would converge in Mayapur, and they would dance, and they would chant Jaya Satchinandana. That this was not just an idle prediction. This was not just a thought, not just a vision of some transcendental madman, but that this was actually the truth. And Prabhupada had absolute faith that this was going to happen. He had absolute courage and faith. And when he brought his dancing white elephants back to India, and they were some from Iran, they weren't all Europeans, they were of all nationalities, some from Africa, some black, maybe, complexion people. That was evidence that this spiritual movement had no boundaries, no national boundaries. That Lord Chaitanya's prediction, Pritivityachajata, Nagaradigam, Sarvatra Prachar, Hoyve Morinam, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's vision of the future were reality. They weren't just some scriptural words, they weren't just a few visions, but they were real. So Prabhupada gave the system of empowerment. He empowered the people who had no sense of Vedic knowledge. Of course some did, but just for example, he empowered them. And this was the method of being very transparent, of taking up the teaching, the method. And Prabhupada would often say that, why are they dancing like this? Why are they not going to movies? And why are they giving up everything? And why are they shaving their hair off? When a man shaves his head off, he's really out of the running for most women. I mean, that's, people are very attached to their hair. I guess today things may be different, but they were giving up everything in material life. And why were they doing it? Prabhupada used to say that they're doing it because I'm not changing anything. I'm not adjusting things. Sometimes in the churches we see bands playing their rock music. They're trying to get their followers back. But they, in the Church of England, I read recently that they've lost 80% of their followers in the last 20 years. So they're doing all kinds of things. And in our Hare Krishna Day, we talked about this particular reverend who had a bar in the back of his church. You know, they're trying so hard, so desperately. And Prabhupada said, no, the only reason that they're following Krishna consciousness is because I haven't changed anything. So he called Bhagavad Gita as it is. Haven't changed a thing. This is the original, pure Vedic knowledge, unchanged, just as it is. And because I haven't changed anything, they're following. That's the reason. It's pure, it's original. That's the reason that they're giving it up, because nothing has changed. And most of his audiences that were involved in some kind of, wherever they were in the world, in some kind of Vedic thought, whether it be yoga or meditation or some psychological philosophy that involves some Vedic thought, was all impure. So Prabhupada said, because this is the original thing. And once he quoted, there's a famous Sanskrit, it's a Hindi proverb, I don't know the Hindi, but it says basically that if you tell the truth, people will come at you with loggerheads. And if you lie, you can illusion the whole planet. And this is true because we know from our own experience that for every genuine spiritual person, there's probably 1,000 charlatans. So Krishna consciousness, in one sense, is walking a very straight line, very narrow line. It's a kind of razor's edge Krishna consciousness, because it's ascertaining what is real and what is not real. So it's mentioned here that Shukadeva Goswami, even though he was surrounded by great Rajarshis, Brahmarshis, Devarshis, was like a moon among the stars. The stars are very insignificant compared to the moon, and the great Chandradoya Mandir, the great moon of Lord Chaitanya is rising in Mayapur. The greatness of Srila Prabhupada is becoming more and more prominent. And even Prabhupada's followers, they are in society, they are like the moons among the stars. We hear the word self-effulgent. They do, they shine out. There's something extraordinary about them. They're considered saintly persons, not ordinary persons. They do shine out. They have a perspective. When someone gets up to speak, and it's happening at every moment of every day, someone is getting up and speaking before people somewhere about something. And there's always a kind of, you know, well, I'm glad I came here, but I'm also very eager to leave. But when a person speaks from the Bhagavad Gita, or speaks from the Vedic knowledge, that's extraordinary. And it's not everyone that may listen, but those who do listen understand that this is not at all ordinary knowledge. This is extraordinary. And the people who speak this knowledge are not ordinary people. They are speaking knowledge which bodes for positive change in the whole society. There's an agenda that Prabhupada had for what we might call social change. It wasn't just to preserve Vedic culture. It was to see an improvement in the world. And it's mentioned that the devotee of the Lord is honored more than the Lord himself. Of course, it's mentioned in the world. And Prabhupada is glorified, and all the devotees are glorified. And we were reading about some of the different faith traditions yesterday, how people wanted to know what was Jesus like, what was Buddha like, what was Muhammad like. And we're very fortunate that we live in the shadow, historically, very close to Srila Prabhupada, and we remember what he was like. And every little thing that he did, the way he would lift his pen, the way he would look at somebody, the way he would walk, the way he would take his massage, the way he would dictate, the way he would get into a car,